Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
A Dear Media original podcast.
Welcome to Wine Face, where we're breaking down everything the experts know about wine in a fun, digestible, and accessible way, because wine is for enjoying and wine is for everyone. I'm your host, Helen Johannesson from Helen's Wines in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Today I'm amazing. I had my first preview of school drop-off, but I just dropped my kid off at a gym where he met his nanny. It was crazy. I was like, how is my son so big? Where's the time going, Sky? But I love it. I love it. The bigger he gets. Today, this is not about Sky. This is about connecting with someone I've known for a long time. She is such an inspiration to me. She's an inspiration, I think, to many in the culinary and wine industry and just like many people, because she's that badass and bomb. I'm talking about Gail Simmons, okay? She is a Canadian-American culinary expert. She is one of the permanent judges on Bravo's Emmy and James Beard Award winning series Top Chef, which I'm a huge fan, by the way, fangirling out, but like just love that show, which is in its 20th season. She is the special projects director at Food and Wine, going on 15 years. She is a published cookbook author. She has two cookbooks, Talking with My Mouthful and Bringing It Home. I think Gail and I have known each other for 10 years. I mean, a long time, since before John and Vinny's and Helen's opened. I'm so thrilled to have her on Wine Face today to talk about hospitality, motherhood, food, everything, and of course, wine. Gail, thank you so much for being on Wine Face. Welcome.
It's my pleasure. I'm so happy to be talking to you, Helen, but it's been too long, so this is good.
It's been too long. Pre-pandemic, Gail used to come to the restaurant, John and Vinny's, pretty frequently. You'd be out in LA. We get a glimpse of you and your family and your lovely kids, and Gail is very good friends with Vinny and Sarah, my business partner, Vinny. Mm-hmm. So that's I sort of know Gail by association, I'll say, but
that's true.
You're just,
we were just reminiscing last night, which we do from time to time in general, about coming to visit you at John and Vinny's in the early days when my daughter, who's now nine, was probably about 18 months old and fell in love with you. I mean, she was obsessed with you for weeks. And we have these videos of her just screaming out the car window at you, Helen, Helen. And sometimes you still just scream, Helen!
I mean,
like it's like a family joke.
It's Helen! I mean, I love that I'm part of the Simmons inner circle. I literally, yeah. Your daughter was
you are.
Just like, we had an immediate connection. I'd like to say my hospitality stretches to 18-month-olds. I'm just, that's my demo. I'm just going for them.
Yeah.
Like, do you want a crayon?
It's a good demo. You left a permanent mark. And now that you're a mom yourself, you know how valuable that is.
Oh my gosh, it's another world. Every day it evolves and changes. And I mean, I look at you and everything that you're doing. I just read off that list of like insane amounts of work and creativity and time. And you have two kids. And
it can be a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot. I think for me, and I don't know for you, like I can create my own schedule now and in many ways and spend the time that I want with them. Do you feel like you have the same flexibility?
Yes and no, because, you know, there are certain things that I can't get out of. Thankfully, we are living in an untraditional time in terms of making your schedule. The pandemic freed us from certain constraints of like having to be at an office all day long, et cetera. Mm. Also, we chose an industry to work in that doesn't necessarily work conventional hours. So I travel a lot for work and often I bring them, which is awesome. And they get to see the world with me, but there's other times when I have to be away and that's really hard. I will say it is a precarious juggle, but there's a lot of perks. You know, there's a lot of great things when it comes to motherhood with the job that I have that
so
I get
much
to
opportunity.
Be flexible about. Yeah. And picking and choosing for sure.
Yeah.
The privilege.
So did you bring your kid? You just wrapped. What season is this of Top Chef?
20.
That's insane. 20th anniversary.
We feel very privileged that we are still making this show. It's actually been 17 years, but 20 seasons. But if you think about that in the life of television, like there are really few series on television that have been around for that long. And I say that not to gloat, but to really like be grateful for this job that I fell into in so many ways. And I can tell you that all of us, when we set out to make the first season of Top Chef, never in a million years anticipated that we would like move to London and film season 20 in 2022.
That's so
going
insane.
Through all the things we've been through along the way. It's insane. And I'm very, very proud of it.
I don't know this. How did you fall into Top Chef, as you just said? Like, were you looking for something like that? Like, what? Tell me how that happened.
No. Who was looking? It didn't exist. If you go back 17 years, I was working at Food & Wine magazine.
That's right.
It was 2005. And the precursor to me being on Top Chef is that when I started at Food & Wine magazine, I started working for them in 2004. And my job at the magazine was actually running part of the marketing department. And I later, within about a year, started running the Classic in Aspen.
That's right.
But another responsibility I took on when I started working at Food & Wine was that I became one of the people at the magazine who had a lot of media experience, because my job before working at Food & Wine had been running PR and working in on the PR team, which was a team of two, me and my boss, for Danielle Boulou.
Oh, wow.
I worked for him for 3 years when his restaurant group was very small. And it was really like an executive team of like eight of us. And so I worked hand in hand with Danielle every day. And I worked on all his PR, all his events, all his charity work, his marketing. And so I had kind of perspective on PR from behind the camera. And when I came to Food & Wine, I also before that had been in culinary school and had been a cook.
Yeah.
So I came to Danielle off of that. And when I got to Food & Wine, there weren't a lot of people who could sort of cook and new PR and new media would be willing to go on camera as a representative for Food & Wine. So I started doing these like little media segments for Food & Wine in 2004, 2005. You know, news segments, Today Show, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Cooking demos, whatever it was. And the end of 2005, Bravo came to Food & Wine and said, we have this crazy idea for a show. It's reality television, which at the time was like Survivor and Big Brother. The only food show in the remote landscape of reality television at the time was Iron Chef Japan, like the original, right?
Yeah. Where it was like dubbed, where it was in Japanese and it was like dubbed in English.
Correct.
Yeah. So good.
Yes. It was amazing.
That's crazy. So did you know Tom?
Yes. I knew Tom because years before I worked for Danielle Boulou, my job had been, so I was the assistant to Jeffrey Steingarten, who was the food critic at Vogue magazine for 30 years.
Oh my gosh.
And I was his culinary and research assistant. And in 2002, maybe even 2001, so when I was like just out of being a line cook, we had written a story for Vogue about how to age meat and how to make the perfect steak. And Kraft had just opened up around the corner from our office.
Crazy.
And Jeffrey knew Tom very well. He was still at Gramercy Tavern and he had just opened Kraft. And Jeffrey tasked Tom with aging a bunch of steak for him, custom aging a bunch of steak. And then we would go to Kraft and do these steak tastings and Tom would cook for us. And I mean, Tom didn't even really pay attention to me. He was working with Jeffrey and I was like coordinating with his assistant.
Yeah.
And that's how I first met Tom. He didn't even remember that. And the first day on set for Top Chef, when Food and Wine decided to put me up for this show and send me to San Francisco to shoot the first season.
Oh,
I sat down beside Tom and I said, hey, you may not remember me. I'm at Food and Wine. We met when we did the steak story for Vogue. I was working for Jeffrey, and that was sort of our reuniting. Ugh. And he has sat beside me for 20 years.
I have goosebumps. Okay.
Yeah,
also,
he's like my big brother.
My first job in LA was at Kraft. That was my first management
really?
Job. Yeah, but I never worked with Tom. He would like cruise in and like...
he would come in and out.
Yeah, and he's at the level where it's like you don't expect him to be there. But that was where I got my first management job. And that's the chef I worked for there is how I met John and Vinny. Because that chef was like...
So we are all connected.
We're weirdly all connected, but dang.
The hospitality industry is very small, yeah.
It's small.
So here we are, 20 years later, still making Top Chef.
Just spent the last 2 months in London... filming, yeah. What was that like? Like, what was your favorite? What's the food scene? I love London, but like, what was your favorite things to do? Best things you ate, best things you drank? Tell me, 411, I'm going in two months.
Much. We were there all of August and September, which are the best months kind of to be in London, except Christmas time is also gorgeous. But it was sunny and hot and beautiful every day. My kids were with me for the first month, so we got to do sort of everything. I got to do a ton of stuff with them, which was great because London's a really great kids town, but it's also a really amazing eating and drinking town.
Yeah.
And then I had a month when they left and went back to school, and I stayed for the show. And the food scene there I find really inspiring, not unlike New York, where it really tells an immigrant story.
Mm-hmm.
The Malaysian food, the Sri Lankan food,
Ooh.
The Nigerian food.
Ooh.
And then, of course, like the very modern, you know, there's obviously we had great Thai, we had great French food, you know, we ate delicious Polish food, but we also had really sophisticated and extraordinary modern British food.
Love that.
Which I found to be like simple and stark, but the ingredients and the produce in the UK just like brought me to my knees. The dairy.
Really?
The egg. Oh my God.
Are their standards higher than other countries? Or like standards of production? I don't want to talk shit about the United States. I'm just saying, like, when I go to Germany, KFC is amazing. Like, their chicken is so good. You're just like, oh my God.
Well, that's the same with like the chocolate bars in the UK, right?
Right.
The quality of Cadbury chocolate, which is like a grocery store, you know, or like you're picking it up at the local convenience store. But like, I go crazy for the chocolate there because it's chocolate.
Like, what's the wine scene like?
Amazing. So here's something I discovered.
I love
which
this.
Has pros and cons, as I'm sure you're well aware. England is producing a lot of wine. Like, that's not a place that I thought to drink my wine from.
Mm-hmm.
Especially they're producing a lot of sparkling wine. And it's not bad.
Yeah. It's really good.
You know?
Climate change is changing everything, but pre-champagne becoming champagne, like hundreds of years ago, like England was actually making sparkling wine kind of around the same time, and they had a little rivalry going. But yeah, climate's shifting in places like England and Northern Europe.
Correct. And so that's terrible for the planet and our inhabitants.
Yeah.
But kind of great for the wine scene temporarily.
Yeah.
I found that really interesting. That they are really working on a blossoming, burgeoning wine scene. That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
The beer is excellent, as you can imagine.
Good.
The cider, you know, things like that, I really love. But more importantly, I think, and I knew this from my last visit to Europe, to France and England over the last several years, is that the natural wine scene, the natural wine bar situation is just like 10 years ahead of us in a lot of ways. It's the standard. It's not like the exception. And so the wine lists are just really interesting. And there's a lot of great small producers that we were turned on to, whether they weren't necessarily all from the UK.
Yeah.
But the wine list there feels so devoutly different than American wine lists. And so I really appreciated that. And just, it was a chance to, we ate out a lot. And there's so many great restaurants. I still have a list of like 75 restaurants I didn't get to. But I made a dent and I drank a lot of great wine.
I love that. I'm going to hit you up. I feel like what you touched on is so interesting because about natural wine, you know, a lot of people in the U.S., I think as Americans, feel the need to like compartmentalize and label things and make it like it's this or that, right? And, you know, I never call Helen's like a natural wine shop because like we have a lot of natural wine, but we also have like other wine that maybe wouldn't fit into that classification, but it's like organically farmed, some of the best Burgundy, some champagne. But it's interesting because when I go to Europe, I see exactly the same thing, that like the lists are more integrated. There is more representation of this wine that actually is just what wine should be. Right. But trying to depolarize, that's what we're trying to do on this podcast, depolarize the American mindset about wine.
That hits.
It's too extreme. Say. So when you guys do wine on the show, like in London, do you try and use like English winemakers? Obviously, I'm sure some people are sponsoring, not like it's like
that. That's a really good question.
Yeah.
So we do have a wine sponsor on the show, but this season we do try to do a lot locally, no matter where we are. And that includes our crew. You know, going to London was exciting because we brought a lot. You know, we have a big crew at this point. We are a big show.
Yeah.
Didn't always feel that way. You know, the first 10 years,
big deal.
We were like a little engine that could.
Yeah.
But now, you know, to make the show that we want to make takes a lot of people and they work really, really hard. But when we went, and we always hire locally in every city we go to, and in London it was great because we had you know, our crew was like half and half, which was really cool.
I love it. Honestly, full disclosure, I had never seen Top Chef until about 5 years ago. And then I got my husband into it, Alex.
Nice.
And, and like, he's more obsessed than I am, I think. Like, he just loves it so much. So he's going to be so excited.
Happy. That makes me happy. That makes me proud. We really like what we do.
So
we want to be doing it for as long as we can. So
I'm all for it. It only keeps getting better. It only keeps getting better.
You know, it's been a conscious effort and I'm grateful to that. You know, it's a conscious effort by us, sure, but our producers and Bravo have really allowed us to like evolve the show and speak to the moment that we're in. And I think every season and every location we go to has its own set of challenges, but also its own characterization and story and moment in time. You know, for example, when we shot in Portland in 2020, that was like by far the most challenging season. We shot in the middle of a pandemic. This is before vaccines, you know, before we really had any clue. We were in the thick of it. And first of all, they really doubled down and created a bubble that we could film in safely, but we were never going to go into making that season and like as if we were in a studio living in a world where the pandemic didn't happen and we were just eating beautiful fine dining food when the entire restaurant industry was out of work, unemployed, on social security, fighting for their lives, bankrupt, losing their houses, you know what I mean?
Just washing groceries off, like everyone's being like, no one knew what they
Not to mention the injustices of that moment that were happening around us, right? So we really leaned into that and we made it very apparent in that season, in every episode, that we addressed an issue that's connected to the food world, that's connected to the world of restaurants and that affects all of us. And that you saw the masks and the social distancing, you know, like we made it real.
Yeah.
And we've continued to evolve that and, you know, make it better. The world has not made life easy for anyone right now, but I think that's what makes the show feel authentic is that we face it.
I have to say,
food's political. People don't want to admit that.
It's totally political. It's always been political. It's always been about control and like minimalism versus maximalism in like a really fucked up way. But what I love about what the producers and what you all have been doing on Top Chef is that in broadening and in a lot of ways, and then being more inclusive in other ways, like you're just so much more talented people are on the show now. Like it seems like that's what's so much cooler to me is I'm like, it's kind of obvious. Like in past seasons, you go back, like some people are amazing and some people are like, but now it's like everyone just is so badass that it really is exhilarating.
Yeah. Two things changed there, but one is that first of all, the thing that I didn't mention is that really at the end of the day, that's what our show is about is the contestants and their stories and those narratives that we have worked so hard to find and tell those stories and to make it a more equitable place to tell those stories and to just show a much more truthful, apparent and relevant picture of what the real restaurant industry is like.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and also that it doesn't come from like one perspective, you know,
tell
all the stories of where people come from in the restaurant industry. And that's exciting because I agree that the,
so important.
The quality of cooking has risen. Our expectations have diminished. You know, we don't feel like everyone has to cook. It's not about cooking a certain way. It's about cooking your way. And we have to rise to you as opposed to you catering to us. You know
what I mean?
But that doesn't mean that the food isn't going to be beautiful and thoughtful and
well executed
in every form.
Yeah, it has to be intelligent. Okay. But I think what's cool is that like it's elevating cuisines that like some people 5 years ago might have been like, oh,
no
you
question.
Go try this. It's a hole in the wall. It's like some cuisines around the world don't need to just be holes in the wall. They should be these
That's
amazing
right.
restaurants that anyway. Mm-hmm. So kudos to you. Two more Top Chef questions.
Sure.
Is there like a whole sort of treasure chest of B-roll stuff that you guys are at any point going to put out? Like spitting out food? I mean, maybe the answer is no, but I'm like, there must be so much like.
The answer is definitely. Well, the answer is yes, it exists. I don't know if it'll ever be put out. But if you think what people also don't see behind the scenes of Top Chef is that we shoot. We have like 8 to 10 cameras shooting. Every episode takes 2 to 3 days to shoot. And we're shooting 10 cameras, like 12 hours a day. So
crazy.
Think about like 120 hours of footage every day for 2 to 3 days that gets boiled down to 46 minutes of actual episode, right?
That's...
So that's the editing process. So what's amazing is it's almost all B-roll.
Like is the judges table is like probably 6 hours.
It used to be. It is still. There are some days when it's 6 hours. Generally, it's about 4 hours. And that
so
is itself now.
Just,
but
yeah.
The first 10 seasons, I would say, the average job judge's table was 6 to 8 hours.
Crazy.
I mean, extraordinary. We have made life more efficient, but also there are so many hours you don't see. There are so many stories that are never shown. There's also a lot of really funny moments. Like I always, when I speak to the people in post-production, I'm always like, you must be so sick of my eye rolling and my snarky remarks. And then like Tom and I are in the corner, like singing Grateful Dead songs. And I mean, there's like all these weird things. And like Tom and I are making snacks.
Oh my God. Last question about Tippity Top Chef before we go to my favorite segment. What about the outfits? The fashion game has elevated. Do you get to keep the clothes?
Thank you.
All the ladies want to know.
That's a funny topic too, that yes, it's like not my clothes. Yes, it's my clothes after the fact sometimes, but the wardrobe department is actually an enormous amount of work and it is a huge
they do it
department.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it's like a 4 to 6, 8 person department at times. You know, we have Padma has her stylist and wardrobe person and Tom and I share a stylist wardrobe person. She's been with us now for 10 seasons.
That's crazy.
And she has, you know, a team helping her and it starts 2 months before the show starts because even though there's only 15 episodes, they're very specific. Every location changes, you know, it's not a fashion show. I don't need to look outrageous and crazy and I don't need to like draw attention, but I want to look sophisticated, professional. I want to hit the right note. I want to be comfortable. I want to be able to eat. But we also are like often we're, especially in the last 3 seasons, we're shooting outside. At least half the time you need the right shoes because you're on grass or sometimes you're on a farm and there are days when it's pouring rain. And then there's a shot where I need a jacket because it snows out of the blue or it hails. Like, you know, there's all these crazy factors. You know, generally I'm in like a cocktail dress, but I think the show has gone a little more casual over the years, which is nice too, because it shows a bit of a different side to us and to food and cooking, right? We don't eat, you know, 12 course fancy tasting menus in real life. So why are we doing it on the show so often?
Oh my God.
It's a big job. It's a big job. Yeah.
Okay. Now it's time for my favorite segment. It's called You Bring,
I Bring.
Yep. And I brought a wine and you brought it. Well, I shipped you a wine and you shipped me some wines. Let's start with your wines. Tell me which one. I have 3 wines here. So you dealer's choice, Gail Simmons.
Oh my goodness.
Roulet.
Where to start?
I'm really excited to taste these and hear about the story and they look delicious.
They're delicious, like easy food wines that I thought would be a good place to meet in the middle.
White wine.
I'm holding the white because it was the closest.
I'm holding the white too.
Great, I can
it's
see that.
Cozy.
So this is a Dioras Chardonnay.
Awesome.
This is from Monterey, from Central Coast of California. This is the 2020. Do you have 2020 in your hand?
No, I have 2021.
Okay. Oh,
but that's okay.
I'm kind of drinking different wines for some reason.
Oh my gosh. But I mean, let's just vibe it out. So talk to me.
Cold, exactly.
Monterey's cool because it's coastal, right? It's coastal.
That's right.
There's nice like salinity influence.
Yes.
For Chardonnay, this smells like very classic to its nature. One thing people don't realize about Chardonnay is it's really a chameleon grape, which like absorbs anything it's exposed to.
I like that. That's sort of a new piece of information for me, which I love because you always teach me so much. It's a California Chardonnay, but it kind of drinks almost more like a French Chardonnay, I would say, because it has less oak and a little more of that coastal salinity, you know, brine.
Yep.
Should we say?
Like a brininess. Like when I smell it, I'm like, ooh, I think this is going to be a little oaky. But actually, the palate is really clean. It's really fresh.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of zest. It's got more of a creaminess. Not sweet, but just like really doesn't aggressively hit your palate with too much acid or mineral.
Yes.
It's very balanced, which is
very
something
balanced.
I'm always looking for in a wine. This is so
Me
cool.
Me too. And that's also, I think, why it makes such a great food pairing wine. Like this is...
What would you pair this with?
A great wine. I don't know. Seafood is what I always kind of want it with. It's an easy drinking wine. You know, the reason I chose it, Viora is a wine that I've been, working with for a long time.
Okay.
Now over a year, I have been creating recipes for them.
Cool.
And they are really, really fun to work with because they sort of give me carte blanche and ask me the same question you ask. Like, what do you want to drink with this wine? And when I describe it, they're like, great, let's make that. So I've been having a lot of fun with this wine and I find it really easy drinking. It's like a really approachable, for the price point's nice and it's actually findable, but it feels a little more decadent, a little more luxurious than, you know, your average supermarket buy.
So like Diora Chardonnay, we could find this in a grocery store across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And which is great because not everybody has access to a fine wine shop or the ability to Helen's or the ability to pay for wines to get shipped to them. So it's nice
Correct.
To be able to identify a brand within a local grocery store that is going to drink really well. Because I think that's mm-hmm. people's fears. How do I know if it's what's in the bottle is going to be good?
Yes. And it's also daunting to go to a grocery store or to a wine shop. I get daunted all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm slowly figuring out what I like.
Yeah.
And I really lean on the people who work in wine shops to steer me to new things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the first step is sort of just knowing what you're looking for, even if it's in an abstract way, right? And then the person can put the pieces together. When you go to a supermarket and you want to get a bottle of wine, you can't necessarily find, you know, Helen and her band of hooligans to describe and to help you find your wine. So having like a few on your list that you know are going to pair well with your food. And I think Diora is a great wine for that purpose because you just, you know that everyone will be happy at the table, even your picky mother-in-law.
I was actually going to say this is a great dinner party white wine because it would please Chardonnay drinkers and Sauvignon Blanc drinkers. It kind of hits two notes. Go Diora. So if people want to see the recipes you're creating for them, where would they find those recipes? On their website?
Yes, on Diora's website. There's a place that has all the recipes that I make for them. And then they're also on my Instagram, which is Gail Simmons Eats. I make videos to pair with all, you know, a lot of the food. So I do sort of one per season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just did a holiday one that you can find. And spring is coming up and I do a Chardonnay pairing.
Oh my God.
So you can check that out shortly.
I just want to tell everybody that Gail is like a super badass chef. She and I did a co-led, like I did a wine class and then she did a cooking class. And I like was watching her segment. Like I went first and then she came on and she was like cooking this crazy steak. And you're a badass chef. Like I'm sure people like, does she, you know, not like they don't know it, but
I think
people
think
probably
right.
underestimate that like, yo, you can throw down. Like, any other.
I cook.
Yeah.
I really do. And I do think, you know, because of Top Chef, which I'm grateful for, but people see me like, again, in a cocktail dress sitting at a dinner table more often than they see me behind the stove.
Yep.
But my roots are behind the stove. And I've worked in, you know, I started off in culinary school, worked as a line cook in New York for a long time. And I've always worked with my hands in the soup, so to speak.
I love
to cook and I love to write recipes and I love to create recipes.
We're both going to open it. So this is Phelan Farm and it's the wine project from Raj Parr, who
he is amazing.
Amazing.
I adore that man.
Super well-known, incredibly respected sommelier who...
He was like Michael Mina's sommelier. Is he still?
Maybe he consults.
He has his own place now.
He's living in Cambria. Like he's literally, I saw him a couple weeks ago. And for the background, this guy was a master somm without being a master somm, right? Like he's the one guy that like all
incredibly
the master somms were like, he knows more than us and we'll never know. But he is now living in Cambria and he has like a fully operational farm. And he's planting vines, growing grapes. It's some of the most exciting wine coming out of California.
living the dream
on a smaller scale. Yeah, it's when I saw him, he seemed a little tired. It was just like post-harvest.
A lot of early morning.
So much early morning. He has like dogs that live there. He has sheep. I mean, it just seems crazy. So this is Gamay Noir. So the Gamay Noir is grown near his farm where the winery is in Cambria.
Also, what is up with the color of this wine?
It's magical.
Gorgeous.
So he's making a lot of the varietals he's making are actually Jura inspired. So he's growing Trousseau, Mondeuse from the Savoie. He's also like the Gamay Noir is not something you'd find in the Jura. You'd find more Pinot Noir. He's growing Sauvignon, but this is just like fresh, bright, a little bit crunchy. It is very soft and delicate, but it's really pretty.
Light.
Such a gorgeous like food wine. I don't know. I thought you'd really enjoy it because of the subtlety.
So first of all, I really do enjoy it.
Yep.
This is my kind of red wine.
Like really?
I'll tell you something that again will show my age. I don't know what happened to me a couple years ago. I stopped being able to drink red wine as much as I want to. And it kind of depends on the wine I'm drinking.
You're not alone.
But my taste in red wine has really changed as I've gotten older.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, in my 20s and 30s, be able to drink like big red wines. And I would like totally get into the like super Tuscans and the Cabs. For sure. And now I'm not able to do it. Like physically it doesn't make me feel great. I mean, it depends on the wine, but I'm just always looking for great food pairing reds, but that you can pair a little more broadly and also that just are like light and fresh. There's like beautiful levity to this wine, like really nice.
Like you feel, okay, so first of all, you're not alone.
A little bit of pepperiness.
Since opening Helen's, and I don't know whether it's like I'm a female in the wine business that so many women have felt comfortable to open up to me, but number one comment I get from women over the age of 35 is I can't drink red wine or I can't drink full-bodied red wine anymore. I can't do it. And I got to find a doctor because it has to do probably with the tannins and the histamines, but I'm always like, you need to drink Gamay. You need to drink Pinot Noir. You need to drink lower alcohol red wine that's lighter in body, and you'll be totally fine. And it 100% totally fits, and it's a female thing.
Absolutely.
It's really wild. It must have
so
something.
So interesting. Except also my husband, who is also
I'm not saying it's only female, but mostly women talk to me about wine. They're like,
We react differently to wine, my husband and I. We both can't really drink big full-body reds anymore, but for different reasons. For me, it keeps me up.
Yep.
Gives me like heart palpitations at night and like maybe anxiety, but also just keeps me up. I'm like wired if I drink it. I can't sleep well.
That's what women say.
It gives him like intense heartburn.
Oh, yeah.
Funny because he's an old man. But so there's like a study there. There's something there.
We got to find the person.
Helen, first of all, that you are basically like a female wine therapist.
Exactly.
Which doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Because I feel very comfortable opening up to you about all things, but wine in particular. But that's like a really interesting thing. I didn't realize that I was not alone. It's nice to not feel alone.
You're not alone. And I think women don't feel empowered to talk about their body, how it changes, to how is it correlated to your taste changing, how our hormones change from day to day, week to week, and then as the years go by, and that like there should be empowerment in that, not you know, oh shit, like I'm not the same version of myself I used to be. Like,
yes.
The rhetoric around like, yo, drinking light red wine is where it's at. That's my thing is I don't really like.
Well, Gary, we're launching the campaign right now. Also, thank you, Rajat Kaur, for creating wines for sophisticated women.
I mean, he's literally he's literally a gem. You got to come out here. We'll get him involved. We'll do something.
Oh, I love that. I love that man from afar.
Okay, Gail, you are such a treat. I could talk to you all day. But before we wrap, I love to put guests through a segment I like to call Right Now Rapid Fire. Means answer to
love
how
it.
You're feeling right now. Are you down? Down.
Down.
We go? All right. Here we go. White or red?
Gamay Noir. No, generally white.
White, cool. Light or full?
Light.
Orange wine or rosé?
Both, but not together. But maybe these, like, I mean, I dig the funk.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say orange right now.
You really had a time in London. All right, fill in the blank. Fill in the blank. Fried chicken plus?
Champagne.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, Truffles or caviar?
Caviar. No brainer.
Oh my God, amazing.
You're the first
person who hasn't hemmed and hawed about that one. What is your...
I just sent caviar to my aunt last night, literally delivered, because it was her birthday. And I was like, if we can't be together, at least I can send you caviar.
You're such a
badass. I want to eat all the time.
Oh my God. What's your current drink order?
Besides wine?
Yep. It could be anything.
I love an espresso martini. I'm kind of into the fact that they're back.
I do too.
Once in a while, they really are delicious. And also, otherwise, if I'm feeling a little sultry, we'll hawk in Negroni.
Ooh, okay.
You know, Mezcal Negroni.
See, if I'm not drinking wine, I'm drinking Mezcal. It's my fave.
I feel that.
I love it. Mm-hmm. You got to do Top Chef Oaxaca.
Oh,
I mean, that would
please.
Just...
I've been begging. I actually, when we were on our way out of London, I said to my producers, please, what body part do I have to sell to do our next season in Mexico City?
Oh.
And they were like, yeah, I don't know. We're working on it. But, it's difficult. But we are bold.
I'm going to start writing letters. Dear Top Chef producers. Gail, you are literally just the best. If people want to learn more about you, buy your cookbook, follow you. I know you're... Instagram, you mentioned it before, but tell everybody where they can get more Gail Simmons.
Gail Simmons Eats on Instagram and just straight up Gail Simmons on Twitter. But, you know, go to Instagram. It's prettier.
Oh, Gail, thank you so much. This was so lovely. I can't wait to see you in real life. Come to LA.
Thanks, Helen.
Be in New York.
You're the best.
You are the best. You're just a dream.
Yes, please.
Oh, my
thank
gosh.
Thank you.
All right,
my
cheers.
My pleasure. I love seeing you.
Enjoy the rest of the wine. Cheers. Wow.